Hello, everyone. Welcome to Yachting International Radio. You're with Preen Rayson from The Crew Coach on the Wellbeing Project. Today, I have Penny Bell. Now, Penny is a fashion illustrator. She works with luxury boutique brands across the globe, and I am incredibly lucky to have her here with us today. Penny, do you want to add to that?
No, I think you've done a perfect job.
Sometimes it's very difficult to get my tongue around certain words, especially with my brain. It works really fast. I'm already thinking like two sentences ahead, and then my tongue gets tired. But anyway, let's start. This is very interesting for me, and thank you for having the courage to speak about narcolepsy and your experience, because to be honest, I was reflecting on it, and I don't think in my psych or counseling degree they actually covered it. And it's a chronic sleeping disorder, and I don't know much about it because I don't feel like there's a lot out there in the public, unless you obviously have it and then you do your own research and journey through it. So can you just explain a little bit about what it means?
Yeah, so I think what the information about narcolepsy that the public knows is often portrayed through movies. So it's, you know, a lot of the time it's, well, sometimes it's not that far from the truth, but it is exaggerated to an extent and in a, often a comedic way as well. So sometimes it's not taken as seriously as what it is. So it's a neurological sleep disorder, basically. And it means that I don't have a certain amount of cells, a specific type of cell. I have less than the average person does. I don't really understand the ins and outs of it, but it's a chronic sleep disorder, which means that I can fall asleep anywhere, anytime, and no matter how hard I try to stay awake, I just can't. So, yeah.
Interesting. So can you feel it coming? Like, I know, you know how people say, oh my gosh, I feel like I've just hit a wall? And I feel like that at 8 o'clock at night, and it comes on really quickly, and then I pass out. So does it, do you have any warning signs when you are going to fall asleep?
Not really. I mean, when it's particularly bad, yes, but like if you ask me if I could go to sleep now on the floor, I could. So there are certain times of the day where it's particularly bad. So probably around an hour and a half after I've got up and done my exercise, had breakfast, I feel like I've run a half marathon and just have this overwhelming need to go to sleep, and I can't get through it. I'll have to have a 20-minute nap. Otherwise, I'll just be falling asleep at the desk. So there are certain times of the day where it's really bad. I don't think I have ever woken up feeling refreshed after a sleep, because I have a different sleep cycle to the average person as well. So I don't wake up from a refreshed sleep. So it's kind of always there.
Okay. So how do you manage work? You work for yourself now, right? And you were employed previously. So how do you navigate around that?
I think I was lucky. When I was diagnosed, I was 14. So it came with the onset of puberty, and that's when narcolepsy can lie dormant in your body, and it can come out with puberty or it can come out through another illness. But because I was diagnosed when I was 14, and I started to get the symptoms when I was 10, but was diagnosed when I was 13 or 14, they're some of your most formative years. So I kind of, in a way, grew up with it and learned how to adapt my life around it. And I've always been very open with sharing and talking about it. It's I think a lot of people find illnesses or, you know, health issues difficult to talk about, but I haven't ever been that way. So it was something that I addressed with my school, and I told them that, you know, my parents arranged a meeting, and I said to them, I wasn't going to abuse it and use it as an excuse to get out of something or to not do something. So when if I came to them and said, I can't do X, Y, and Z because of narcolepsy, then I needed them to trust me that that was the reason for, or that I couldn't possibly do it. And that's kind of how I've then gone into the workforce, is I don't tell people in an interview because they don't need to know. And they don't need to know because I'm a highly functioning person. And I have built in enough habits and routines around my sleep that I know that I can function well at work, provided I'm on medication, and it's not going to hinder my capabilities or my efficiency in a job. So I think that's something that I believe that too. I think that's a lot. I know that I'm capable, and I know that I can control it to the best of my ability. And often it will come out later down the track, and I'll tell them, but it hasn't been an issue, to be honest.
Okay, great to hear. Have you ever been discriminated or bullied because of it?
I think people probably have tried. But as I think you know, Corinne, I'm not a shrinking violet. So I'm quite sure I've put people back in their place a fair bit. But I think also when you're open about something and can tell people about how it affects you and prove that you're not a victim of it, or it's not defining who you are, it's easy. It's, you know, I kind of think that it's easy to have it empower you and use it as a form of empowerment, as a form of disempowerment. Yeah. So, you know, if people have ever joked about it, you know, a lot of my friends and family love to have a laugh over it. And I don't mind that, because they're also my friends and family and are caring, kind towards me anyway. But I think if I can laugh about it and, you know, talk about it, then other people can laugh about it and talk about it. But there's a line as well that I would never cross, you know, if they used it as a form of discrimination or as a tool to segregate me, then that I would quite happily and confidently step in and let them know that that's not on.
That's good. That's good. So what do you think us as a community, the general public, we can do to better support those, not only with who have to endure something like narcolepsy, but mental health issues?
I think understanding and understanding and doing your own research, because like I said to you earlier, a lot of what I knew about narcolepsy was from Moulin Rouge and Juice Bigelow, and I think that's a very warped perception of what the disorder is, and that's the public side of the disorder. The private side of the disorder is, I don't like to say that it's, you know, it's not something that I find tough, but it definitely impacts the people closest to you. And it is tough at the end of the day. And the reason why I can confidently talk about it is because I've kind of got past all of that hard stuff. But I think the best thing people can do is to ask questions, do their own research, and not just look for the research or the information they want to find, like fact check as well.
Yeah.
And I think the person who has has also got a job to do in making that sure that the people they're talking to are informed and being honest about it as well. But I know with narcolepsy, the there is a tendency for a lot of people who have it to get depression. And that's something that I was made aware of, that that potentially could happen. And because one of the symptoms of narcolepsy is a thing called cataplexy, which is triggered by an emotion and affects your central nervous system. And I get mine when I laugh, but I fall over and collapse. So when I feel happy or excited or confident or just pride even, my body will go limp and I'll collapse, or my muscles go weak. So there is a likelihood that people will sort of detach from emotion because it's easier not to feel that, because you don't want to experience the collapse. And that's also quite exhausting and emotional to go through. So in order not to feel that, you can detach from the emotion, and then that obviously leads to, you know, depression or anxiety. So that was something that I don't think I've ever been depressed, luckily, but I definitely a few years ago noticed myself. I always loved telling stories, and I stopped telling stories. And I said to my mother one day, I don't tell stories anymore. And I feel a bit numb. And that was a bit of a flag for me, because I thought, ooh, numb's not living. That's not a way to live. And so then I went about trying to find other ways that I could feel a deep sense of satisfaction and joy that you'd get from being happy or excited or laughing. And so I had to go. It was a bit of a journey, Corinne, I'm not going to lie. I was trying a whole lot of different things in order to find what that was. And I think that's something that's not talked about. I think it's so easy to prescribe a drug to help you. And don't get me wrong, I think there are drugs there to be used for mental health. And I definitely think you should be seeking medical advice from a specialist or a GP to work with you as well, but I was. So, but I think it was a lot of trial and error for me of going, does that bring me joy? No. Okay. What's another thing I can try? And so I tried a whole lot of different things and landed on composting, which sounds ridiculous and so lame and pretty crazy, actually.
Yeah.
But somehow that it gave me the satisfaction and the sense of joy that I got from laughing. So I think that's the other thing. A pill can't fix everything. You've got to do other work around yourself and in combination with as well. So
interesting. Gosh. So, and that goes back to my thoughts about medication. That's why I was like, to be a clinical psychologist was certainly what I didn't want to become, because I feel like there's so much more to the self, and it's about exploring all avenues. And you do have to have resilience, because I know how difficult it could feel, and you just feel like giving up, because you're like, well, what's the point? This isn't working. But you creatively pivoted and found something that you could do to either substitute or reduce those other feelings and, you know, bring some light back into your life rather than feeling numb.
Yeah, and I think I think we underestimate ourselves a lot as what we can endure, but also what we're capable of. And everyone knows that, you know, hardship often leads to great things, but it's also I think you've got to get really curious with yourself. And that's what I think, you know, a lot of people don't want to go there because maybe they're scared of who they might find. And there are parts of ourselves that we don't like. Everyone has them. And if you don't confront them ever, then you're going to be scared of yourself for the rest of your life. So you've either got to confront them and deal with what that feels like and then find the other side of yourself that you do like. But it's not even, you know, narcolepsy isn't even about liking yourself. It's more just being curious about what brings you joy and doing something about it as opposed to thinking about it. You know, I think when you think about feeling upset or you know that something's not quite right and don't do anything else about it, you know, you can't expect life to change. So, you know, yeah, it's all about balance.
No, absolutely. And I think that's a great segue into self-discovery. And I know with the Crew Coach, that's probably embodies everything that I do at the Crew Coach and the different services, from counseling, that's a process of self-discovery, the leadership course, self-discovery, discover your career potential, self-discovery. So for yourself, I know that you have a membership, and I know both of us are passionate about connecting people, bringing them together to discover those beautiful aspects of themselves that they might be blind to. So I'd love to know about your membership and perhaps some of the journeys that your members have gone through in that process of self-discovery. What have they discovered through drawing?
So I have a membership called the Artistry of Creativity, and it's all about being creatively self-expressed and expressing yourself, basically, because I just think we could do with a whole lot more self-expression in the world. And so it's really a membership to discover, explore, create, embrace, and master your creative self-expression, and also remove any ideas or beliefs that you might have around creativity. I know for a lot of people, they think that creativity isn't accessible to them, or that it's only accessible to a certain type of person, or that you're born with creativity. And I don't buy that. That's not how it was ever sold to me. It's problem solving at the end of the day. And that's exciting, like to be able to work on solving problems. So in the membership, I take my members through a bit of I suppose it's a journey, but it's more just I offer them different things that they can implement into their everyday, or they can do tasks or exercises or activities that can nurture a form of creative self-expression out of them. It's really about trying a whole lot of different things that aren't just drawing. So we do a mindful drawing class once a month, which I love. Mm-hmm. And the stories and the experiences that everyone shares in that is so exciting. Mm-hmm. But we also do other things. So we do, you know, fashion week, where they have to create outfits for the entire week according to a certain theme. And then there's looking at exploring your voice and how you use your voice to express yourself. So there's so much, I guess, discovery within the membership, because the whole membership is basically around exploring and discovering. So we have one woman in the group who's blind, and I just think she's a rock star, because she signed up to a mindful drawing, artistry of creativity, self-expression membership, which for so many people is intimidating and classified as too hard.
Yeah.
And yet here Shelley is killing it. Yeah. And her whole world has just expanded and opened up, and she said that she's no longer scared to share herself and to give herself, like to present herself to the world. And I think, whoa, for you to be hiding away for your entire life is such a shame, because she's such a beautiful, uplifting member of the community. So that's been, I've loved seeing her confidence grow. And it's not just her confidence in drawing and sharing, but how she even sits now and engages with everyone in the group. Her posture's changed, her voice is more commanding and confident, and just in how she is able to express herself, but also her self-awareness and providing insight of her experience has been able to open up a whole lot of doors for other people to then reflect on their experiences. So that's one. We've had a lot of people have said their life, they have a more enhanced experience of life, and that they look at things in a whole new way. And it's based a lot around gratitude. I think for a lot of people, they feel like they're able to be heard and seen.
And so many people don't feel heard and seen.
Oh,
so many.
So many mothers. These poor mothers of the world, you know, they're very little, like seldom are they heard by their kids.
Yeah.
And that's been a beautiful thing to see so many people come out of their shells almost and express themselves, and then to be acknowledged by other people in the membership and say, that's awesome, or, you know, you go girl, or, oh, tell me more about that. You know, it's giving them permission to share and also the confidence to share, but it's also benefiting other people. So they feel like they're of value to the group as well. It's, I love it.
And what I'm taking away from this conversation is the power of vulnerability, the power of getting out of your comfort zone, and the importance of reframing difficult situations.
Yes.
Don't be a victim of your circumstance.
Yeah. You know,
there is a way out.
Yeah. I think we did an exercise the other week where we were exploring our voice and how we use our voice. And so just for context, I was classically trained in singing and did a lot of speech and drama. And so I was running them through some voice exercises and drills they can use to help with their clarity and their projection and articulation and elocution. And then we also looked at breathing. And two members in the group, when we signed on for the call, said that they were there very reluctantly. And, you know, voice is also one of those things. It's like drawing. A lot of people believe singing is only available to those who can hold a note or who are talented enough in that area, whereas singing is available to everyone because we all have a voice. And so seeing them at the end of the class and hearing what they got out of it, they both members said, oh, surprisingly, I loved that. And one loved it because she said her face was completely relaxed because we did some face massage and to help relax the facial muscles. And she said, I've never felt my face feel so relaxed before. And her voice was also louder and clearer. And then another girl said that she enjoyed it because of the elocution and the clarity that she heard in her voice, but she also heard a new voice come out of her that she hadn't heard before. So there's so many different things that people get out of it, that they're, you know, someone might experience one thing, another person might experience another thing. And that's what's so great, is everyone's experience is so different.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, Penny. And is there anything you'd like to share in terms of perhaps a resource to help embrace that part of self-discovery, whether it's around the mindfulness drawing or a book or anything that can, even a quote that inspires you in some way to help people embrace or connect with that part of themselves that they perhaps have neglected or feel shy to expose?
There's a saying, there's two sayings. So one is, you can't help those who won't help themselves, which is pretty pragmatic, but it's true. So you have to want to help yourself, and that, and not because you feel like a victim, not because you feel vulnerable or self-help like anything like that. You just have to be curious about yourself, and if something's not working for you, then do something about it. Then so there's that, and there's, it's something like, it's something about change where you can't expect something to, I can't remember the quote. It's something about you can't, you'll get the same result if you don't, if you do the same thing.
Yeah.
So which is something insane. Around like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the, one of the best books I, or two of the best books that I would recommend is Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. Yeah. Have you read that?
I've bought it. I've bought about 400 yeah. books that are sitting on my Kindle waiting for you to be read.
That's one of the most inspiring books I have read. And I think, again, a lot of people who don't associate themselves to being creative, the title would probably put them off. You know, a lot of people think, oh, Big Magic sounds woo-woo. But, yeah. you know, I think a lot of people have this thing around creativity that is woo-woo, or I don't know. But don't let the title put you off if you're that way inclined, yeah. because it's so juicy and inspiring and uplifting. It's really exciting. It's a great one to read. And the second one is by Julia Cameron, and that's called The Artist's Way. And don't let the title of that one put you off, but it's all about rediscovering who you are, which sounds very vague, but what your passion is for life. And it walks you through all different exercises and activities to discover that, embrace it, and action it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Penny, for your courage and your time. I really, I love your energy. I love connecting with you.
Thanks, Penny. I always love talking to you.
Bye.